Okay. Story in Mahabharata, I'm getting more and more into that and could bring it up in Priya as well. Just some thoughts here on the production of such a, I mean, potential production of such a series. I'm looking at this Chopra Mahabharata, episode 83, 46, 45 minutes, something there, where Arjuna realizes that Abhimanyu is dead, his son is dead, and Krishna is talking to Arjuna. And, of course, Arjuna, perturbed, out of his mind for a little while there, although he's a warrior. And Krishna is speaking so deeply and beautifully there that he says that on the battlefield, in the battle, there are just weapons, and death is there in the shadow of those. In fact, I think I just... A warrior's life is nothing but weapons. Death follows like a shadow. Death is our companion in the battlefield. Those who cannot run away have to die on some battlefield. And here's God speaking to his dear friend Arjuna. He has just spoken the entire Bhagavad Gita, containing the transcendent knowledge. How we, there was no time where I didn't exist to you, and so on. And we have to raise above this perspective of life and death, and so on. And here Arjuna is still like this, and Krishna could just stand there coldly, say, but what I told you. I told you, haven't you understood, or don't you remember anything I said there in the Bhagavad Gita? But no. And I would say this actor here captures that in very well, at least how it seems to me, that, you know, Krishna has feelings too. And of course he has feelings for his friend. So, if he would just now stand there as a teacher saying, oh, I told you this, I told you that, that would be cold. So he's there emotionally with Arjuna, and he's himself visibly moved by the seriousness of the situation. But come on, he's God. Why should he care about such little petty things? Well, because Arjuna is his friend, and it's not about big or small. It's about Krishna loving every one of us. And thus, when we need him, he's there. Not just as a teacher with pointing, you know, the finger and like that, but in many ways, in deeper ways, with love and friendship. So what I wanted to say here is a note to whoever will make that Mahabharata in our modern, globally successful version. That this is one example of the subtleties that one has to handle with expertise, not just writing wise, I mean, like that, or production wise, or acting wise, or so on. But in the, I would say, spiritual content here of this story, what is Krishna doing there? I mean, I remember used to be a little baffled sometimes when reading the Mahabharata, because here is God in all this and partaking in this. And why should he? And does he want all this to happen? Or is he trying to stop it? Why can't he? I mean, I didn't really ask that much so, but more that why should he be involved here at all? Why does he care? But then I realized that, hey, this is the part of existence, Krishna's Leela. And even this may be happening in this puny little earth realm where we are, but it's as important as everything else everywhere in existence, because it's about our relationships, how we treat each other, how we feel due to that, and so on. And Krishna cares. And I say it's important there, because unless we can see it that way, it may even be difficult for us to, right now, here where we are, turn to Krishna personally as a friend, as someone we can really personally take shelter of at any moment and trust. It would, I would say, even probably obstruct our love for Krishna. Because if we see Krishna as some, I would say again, slightly impersonal or at least distanced God up there somewhere, even beyond Vaikuntha, I mean, some exclusive realm called Goloka, far away from here, not caring about me, at least not more than standing up, speaking the Bhagavad Gita, and then leaving us on our own to figure that one out and implement that in our lives and take care of ourselves best we can. No. If you stand there, having lost your son or daughter or mother or father or spouse or friend, and you feel the way that we feel in such situation, if we are normal and not emotionally challenged, then Krishna is there. It's not whether this is good or bad or right and wrong that you feel like this now. It's about that Krishna is here with you. And you can turn to Krishna, who will be there as the first good, real friend. If you have no other good, real friend in the world, then you have Krishna. And you can cry and he will listen. And he will embrace you and you can feel it. If you care to feel, if you can feel. If you haven't shut yourself off inside that hard-shelled heart that sometimes the tapasvis and renunciants and the heavy swami ascetics risk doing, which Prabhupada himself warns us for. So I would say this is important in general, and it's important we make a story like this, that, and that's what makes it so dramatic. Here's God in the middle of this mess there and this drama, and how he is emotionally involved there. And it's not just a story, just fictitious somewhere else or whatever. It's our story as well. And I said that's how we should read this Mahabharata and this Bhagavad Gita and so on. It's our story. And just as Krishna is standing there together with Arjuna, partaking in Arjuna's sorrow, Krishna is here with us, partaking in your sorrows and my sorrows when we have them, and our happiness as well. And then he lifts us out of those sorrows. Because he can do that. They can do that. Radha Krishna, mother and father. So yeah, I just think this is an important dimension to keep in mind when writing a script or producing such a thing, if it will ever happen, which I hope. But it's subtle. It's not just an action story with a lot of fighting and politics and all of that. It's not just a, some say, Strisudra Dvijabandhu decoration around the Bhagavad Gita that then was cleverly slipped in there in that mundane story, which doesn't mean anything in itself, else than attracting the less intelligent. It's a very beautifully and deeply and well written story that deserves a place, a prominent place among the greatest, most well-known, well-written and respected epics of the world. And for some reason, it seems to me at least, that it has been obstructed from being respected on that level. Maybe by the sudden influence of certain people from the West. Well, we have got the Brits, they were there, right, and did a lot, and still, in people's minds here in the West, we find that, I would say, superiority complex, this arrogance against Indians and other cultures. wherein this may be, just be included. So maybe if I'm seeing things the right way, the time of this Mahabharata is yet to come. And maybe there's a purpose, a reason for that as well. That we haven't understood it properly. Just as we haven't understood the Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Indian Vedic scriptures. And that may be, well, it's a matter of time, because they weren't really even discovered by the Westerners, which to them seemed that they were not discovered by the world, because the Western Hemisphere is the world, the center of it. You see, again, the colonialist pride, ignorance, arrogance. Why should you take this seriously, the Hindu mythology? So I'd say that because that you haven't seen the subtleties here. And it may just be a part of a natural, gradual, slow, but fairly steady maturing process from the mid-19th century, when the British and Germans and so on, they first started translating the Sanskrit literature into English and German, Western languages. Well, it's like less than 200 years ago, 150 years ago or something, and it takes time, you know, to understand also what is going on here in these books. When you, well, I would say that because that requires respect and taking it seriously and really maybe even, or I would say especially even, the humility to at least think the thought that maybe the knowledge here is even far above our knowledge. Because if it's so sophisticated and so advanced that it's above our culture, the knowledge and the literature and whatever we have in our culture, then we won't even see it. Because the only way to see it then is to carefully look and humbly look upwards and asking, please, explain this to us ignorant fools. That is the attitude that you find there actually in the Vedic culture, Indian culture, and I would say others, of the student towards the teacher. And so it's kind of logical that if you want to learn about another culture and their wisdom and their scriptures and their knowledge, you're a student. You need to learn from them. Not just as, yes, we often find here, or found, look, we have translated these books, now we know them better than you. And we got Christianity, which we are going to teach you about, because that's what really matters. That's where the real thing is. So why should we care about listening to you explaining your old mythology? So we can see the, at least to, in some way, the one possible cause for this lack of understanding of even, you could say in a way, the beginner level of Indian Vedic knowledge, the Mahabharata, which I would say most people today couldn't even read if they try. It's too advanced for them. Too thick, too much words. Let's watch a movie instead, or a series. So yeah, maybe that's what it's gonna be. All right, Hare Krishna.